What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 106 of Value Town. I'm Chan-Man V, and joined, of course, by my co-host each and every week, Noxious. What's up, buddy?
Not much, man. Just living the life, staying at home, playing video games. That's what I do.
Oh, yeah, of course. And I want to welcome to the show for the first time in 106 episodes. This is crazy. I want to welcome from Team CLG, 6-0. What's up, buddy?
Hey.
Hey, all right. How you been, man? I know you've been traveling a lot lately, so I'm glad we got a chance to catch you before you were sleeping today or trying to recover from jet lag.
I just got back from China, but it's all good.
Cool. So Ladder just ended last night, right?
Yes.
And did you get a chance to play at all? Because I know in China, like, you were, you know, obviously in a different region and super busy. So any chance to try to get some of those ladder points for the season?
Yeah, I tried the last 2 days, but I failed.
Yeah, it's kind of tough, right? If you can't really play in the last 2 days anymore like you used to, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's like you have to highball at some point with Shaman or whatever, and I didn't. I'm not sure. I also didn't feel like I played very well, so it's kind of on me to not finish.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, it's all good. It's tough, man, when you come back from travel and stuff to feel engaged in laddering. It can be really, really tough. But anyways, guys, we got a ton of things to talk about. We just kind of had like a mini question from a 6-0 interview, but that's what we're going to start off with, just getting a chance to talk to him, catch up with him, and just everything that's going on. And then we'll do our our decks, you know, where we talk about our decks or our week in Hearthstone, which will include that. And then we'll do a new segment or a semi-new segment with topic and tip of the week. So we'll have a discussion topic that just will create some kind of general discussion between the three of us, and then of course we'll have one tip of the week for folks that might not or might be struggling on ladder, might not understand why they're not winning, and maybe this one tip will help you out. Got Mechatoris Workshop 2 with a bunch of custom cards. We got some cards from patrons, some from viewers, some from Noxious' stream where they had the collective building.
But, yeah. I'll go through the process of how it happened to be like somewhat. I'll try to make it quick, but it was pretty cool.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, that's for those of you who don't want to know what Mechatoris Workshop is. That's where we come up with new card concepts, and we use hearthcards.net to build some cards for us to talk about. And then lastly, we've got a couple questions from the viewers in Q&A, and they got some interesting questions that we'll be able to cover here. But I want to start off with talking to 6-0, and we haven't gotten a chance to talk to you since, obviously, for ever, because you've never been on the show, but I haven't even personally gotten a chance to talk to you about joining CLG, because it's huge. I mean, CLG is one of the big esports brands and team brands in the space, but they've never really gotten into Hearthstone. So this is, I think it's their very first foray into Hearthstone. Tell me about that. Like, just how has it been being on CLG?
Yeah, so far it's been pretty good. We actually joined the team a month before the announcement, but there was some issues announcing it. But yeah, we are very happy to be on CLG and looking forward for the year with CLG.
So who's on the team with you?
Hoi and Sorinda.
Okay, yeah, that's a pretty solid team right there. You guys are playing in Trinity, right?
No.
No?
We formed after they did the invites.
Yeah, the Trinity was actually, the invites had already gone out, and the team wasn't made yet, as far as I think it was in the works already for a while, but it wasn't officially announced. So you had to come out after Trinity.
Well, you guys would have done really, really well. So
probably.
I had to catch them the next time around. So CLG, I know you were teamless. How long were you teamless for before this whole CLG signing?
So we ended up leaving Na'Vi end of September, and we signed the contract with Na'Vi early December, so 2 months without a team.
Okay. Yeah, how was that search? Like, there a lot of people I know, at least during the latter parts of last, the 2016, maybe even the second half, were just saying that, there just wasn't as much sponsor interest in Hearthstone, as it used to be, and even some teams not being as interested, but it sounds like that's might not have been the case.
Yeah, no, it was like the opposite. We had like too many reasonable offers that we had to consider. I was talking with like basically all the big esports organizations that aren't in Hearthstone yet, And yeah, it's like needed some time to talk to every team and figure out what's the best option.
Yeah, I have a question regarding that, actually. I'm sure you've been approached by a lot of teams who might have not wanted the full three of you, right? Like, because I know when Oskaka went for Alliance, then you had Hoi, Surrender, and yourself left. Like, were you ever approached to be just the first and only pickup of the old Na'Vi team and just had to decline that, or how did that go?
Yeah, it's some offers, but like every time a team contacted me, I was like, I wouldn't join by myself. So it's like, wow. Some teams are like, okay, we consider getting the team then. Some teams are just like, okay, we can't pick up all three of you, so bye. So, but yeah, we actually like started joining, wanting to join a team with Oskaka, but there are multiple team leagues like the Trinity Series coming up, which only want 3-player teams. So it just made sense that Oskaka joins Alliance and we stick together.
Okay. I didn't actually realize you guys were a package, or you guys, you know, were shopping as a package.
Hoi and Surrender helped me out a lot during the last year, so I was like, not just gonna leave them alone. So it's just
that's a team bro right there. That is a team bro right there. Yeah,
no question.
That's good stuff, man. I like to hear that. That's just always the kind of that makes teams worth something, right? Like, you know, for all the talk about teams just not being important in Hearthstone, it's kind of nice to see that at least you guys look out for each other.
Yeah, it's real teammates, right? You know, that's loyalty and all everything that comes along with it. That's actually great to see, and that would encourage more actual team, you know, team centric feel to the community as well as even to some of these events, instead of just a bunch of individuals thrown together for branding purposes, you know, and things like that. It's good to hear. Definitely great to hear. So in terms of China, like, you were in China for a long time, right? Like maybe a month or something like that?
Yeah, like almost 3 weeks, I think.
Okay, 3 weeks. Okay, just 3 weeks. That's cool. And you guys ran into each other maybe, right? Like, were you both at, I mean, you were obviously at the same tournament, right?
Yes.
The Star Ladder tournament, you know, given that you did super well in it.
It was a weird event, right? Like, I guess it was just a big, I don't know how it was on the player side exactly, but on the caster side, it was a mess. But you guys had some problems to deal with too, like connectivity and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, that was a Hearthstone servers going down in China. It's not really the organizer's fault. It's just like the Chinese Hearthstone servers went down for like almost a full day. So,
oh my god, really?
Yeah, I was playing against PNC. We disconnected and the servers went down for like over 5 hours.
Yep. So,
right, right.
Can't blame the organizer for that, but yeah.
Wow, okay. Overall, I don't think has that ever happened in NA? Have we ever lost Hearthstone for
that long?
A day? That is insane, man.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, right? I mean, I know Europe might have had that happen before, but yeah, NA, we thankfully haven't had the experience of that. That's crazy. How'd you like it in China, though? You know, I definitely hear mixed reviews about China. Hearthstone being probably the more negative end of the spectrum. So how was it for you as a player?
Yeah, I mean, some terms are different. Like, for example, I feel like they value the competitive side a little less and like more the production side. Like, the people there are more worried about how the stream looks than about how like soundproof and all that stuff. But overall, I really enjoyed China and had a great time.
All right, that's good. You like the food there?
Yeah, most of it.
Most of it, okay. Like, cool.
I mean, the selection
like
of stuff
looks like it moves.
Oh god!
If it was alive, I'm not touching it, but I'll take the rest.
Exactly. It's always cooked. It's very rare that Chinese people eat raw stuff, to be honest. I've eaten some raw lobster and some seafood stuff like that before, which was kind of odd. I don't think I've ever done that, like even just with Japanese food. But other than that, Chinese people generally like cooked food, so it's not going to be alive at least.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So after Star Ladder, that was Star Ladder, right? The one that you guys were at. What'd you do after that? I forgot. You had the China. No. What was the other event that you were at?
Yeah, the tournament was called Titana. It was just an invitational that was 12 Chinese players and 4 Western players. So it was Sweep and Firebase channel, but it was mostly a Chinese event. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was me, Frozen, Oskaka, and Pavel playing as Western players.
Okay. So China, kind of a China versus China, I mean, just China versus non-China kind of thing? Or
it's just like a 16 players normal tournament.
Just a normal tournament. Okay, got it. Yeah, because I know the China versus NA was during that time too, right? So
yeah, that was the week before, and I was, as in Shanghai, I spent the week in between just hanging out with the NA players.
They should have just rented you as an NA player for the week.
That would have actually worked, probably. Yeah.
You could have been the body shield, so that, you know, like or you could have been the audible wall for the event, so that they couldn't have any of that kind of talking to each other or whatever. Okay, that's cool. So you should go back to China, and you'd be eager to go back to China for some more events in the future?
Yeah, I qualified for the Celestial playoffs. It's like the best of 17 tournament.
That's good. Yes.
It's been going on.
Yeah.
They will, like, the playoffs will happen at some point, so I guess I will go back for that. But I'm not sure what date that will be on.
Oh, that's cool. That's definitely going to be great. I mean, the one thing that's great is that the Chinese tournaments, they pay really well, right? Like, in terms of prize pool and even casting, right? Noxious, they pay pretty well, right?
For casting, it's pretty average. The thing is, if they invite you and the servers go down with 5 hours and you're still paid, I mean, at the end of the day, I guess the work to payoff ratio is probably good, but the time invested, like, you go to China, right? I mean, I live in NA, so going to China is still a pretty big thing. You know, the time it takes back and forth, it's basically 2 days you spend doing nothing, and then, you know, you have to wait around. So it's not like all butterflies and rainbows, but it's honestly like a pretty good, on average, it's pretty good, and they treat their talent pretty well. Like, that's one of the things that China does, is like, they want a stream to look good, and they want the talent to be like, this was the best fucking place I ever went to. So they do like all they can if you want to be accommodated. But yeah, the competitive side of things is like a different story.
Yeah, cool. I went to China twice and won 20k each time, so
it must suck, dude. It must suck real bad. I mean, even China versus NA tournament, I think it paid off really well, even to the loser. So,
well, they got 4K each, I think, a little more because they got like bonus money for the 5-0 win from Cydonia.
yeah, cash in.
They got like around $5,000 each.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. That you don't see events like that very often, at least in NA.
They almost never do. I don't think see the scope of the events in China is so beyond anything we have here, because like there's so much money to go around, but it's allocated in very specific projects that oftentimes get funded by the government, as far as I'm aware. And then you have companies like Alibaba going in and just going crazy because like there's an oversight. Like WCA was partially like government funded, I think, a while back.
Oh, wow.
And I know Alibaba's come in to do this one. Like that was just an overly wealthy company that just figured,
Jack Ma,
fuck it, we could spend like 100k on prod, but we could also spend 150k on prize money. Let's do it. And it's just, it's like a drop in the water for them. Like, even if the tournament, something bad happens, like, whatever, we'll move on with our lives and we'll do another one next time. It'll be better. So they're not too, you know, sketched out by things going poorly.
It still doesn't make sense to me, just spending like that. But, maybe there are crazy streaming numbers over there, though. I just don't realize.
Yeah, probably. I mean, we had two school buses full of people come in on first day to fill up that stadium, bro.
Two school buses, not that many people, Noxious.
But it was like two Chinese school buses. They make it bigger for more people, and the people just sit on top of each other to get in.
Are they like quadruple decker, and so they bring in 1,000
to explain
people?
To you the scope of how it is, God. You don't actually see the bus as they're all like hanging on to the bus as it moves. There's so many of them coming over,
hanging on the windows and stuff like that. Oh my gosh.
I mean, to be fair though, in Morocco that's a thing, so
That's probably true. Well, anyways, that's great to hear. Sounds like you did very, very well in China, 6-0.
You did.
Yeah, and it's definitely good to be, you know, at least in that network of people that they ask, you know, players. And I think you're definitely in that group of players that they always ask for events. So that's awesome for you, man. Definitely great.
I mean, both times I went to China, I had played the qualifiers. It's not like I got invited there.
Oh, that's true, because it was Star Ladder both times, right?
Yeah, Star Ladder actually had to play the qualifier to play the online
to play round. The online one. Yeah. Mm.
So
okay,
but so, yeah, and I did a lot of interviews in China. They seemed like very interested in me, so cool. I'm very excited to get invited to future events in China. Like, apparently, I have a pretty big brand there now.
Yeah,
I take it.
Did anybody think you were Eminem there? Like, or did they, you know, did they confuse you for another celebrity, maybe?
Yeah, probably. Maybe just because I had green hair.
You just go on the stage.
That's
like...
right. You did have like green hair. I forgot about that. That's gone now, right? I remember
Actually, it's like silver now. I went got a new haircut today, new color.
Okay.
But yeah, it's like I made it blue, but by the time I went to China, the blue kind of faded to green.
Faded to green, yeah.
Did Frodan give you styling advice?
No, but he seemed happy with how it went for me, I think.
I like your hair, man.
I like your
hair. I hope you win.
I like your hair, man. Like, that sounds like Dan. That's funny. Well, anyways, glad to have you back, or at least I'm sure you're glad to be back at home, just because it's definitely wears on you after traveling overseas, especially to China for so long.
Yeah, I kind of enjoy going outside and not having smog.
Ouch.
Shots fired, exactly. But I can't see them.
All right. Well, anyways, why don't we talk about a little bit about Hearthstone, since I know a lot of people listening and watching are probably waiting for us to talk some more about some specifics. And let's just do our deck segment, you know, like our week in Hearthstone, maybe some decks that we've been playing. And me and Sixo actually brought a couple of Reno locks to discuss. His being better than mine, of course, but why don't we talk about them right now? And we'll start off with your Reno lock that apparently is Hoi's Reno lock. And
yes.
A couple changes to, you know, just what we've been seeing with just the standard Reno lock that's been out there recently with, you know, no combo and... sometimes you see a rag, sometimes you don't. And then recently you've been seeing corruption, which you see in this one. And then some mind control tech. So why don't you talk about this one? What's a little bit different? Oh, there's a very different card in this deck too. So why don't you talk about it a little bit?
Yes, this is Hoi's list. The letter for the last weeks has been like mostly aggro based. And on an A, like I looked at the stats, and an A is even more aggro based than EU. So Hoi just wanted to beat the aggro shamans and whatnot. So he decided that the other six drops you can play, like Reno or, I mean, Emperor or Savannahs, aren't really good against aggro, so you wanted a six drop that's better against aggro, so you went with Frost Elemental instead.
He said Frost Elemental, guys. He actually did say Frost Elemental. Just making sure you guys aren't hallucinating. So that's great. That's interesting, man. Very, very interesting.
So this doesn't have a, like, giant, the mountain giant. It's just...
Yeah,
not supposed to tap until turn 4, just plays against aggro shaman. It's not like you still have a reasonable chance against control decks just by playing Jaraxxus. Like, you can see those matchups, but yeah, the game plan is to play stuff before turn 4.
Yeah, I kind of like the distribution of minions in the deck. Like, you play Sunfury and Argus for the massive taunt line. The Frost Elemental helps a lot against the weapon classes, of course. Corruptions is the earliest game removal in the game right now. Like, that's going to kill something that you need to get rid of. Hint, hint, small-time Buccaneer if you're desperate. And it actually pairs very well with Frost Elemental and combo plays against some decks, which is also another consideration. I feel like there's been some argument, actually, about Sylvanas specifically. I haven't heard as much complaints about Emperor, but a lot of people said that they felt like Sylvanas in Reno decks was just not a good fit anymore based on the metagame. So that's probably why that Frost Elemental makes more sense.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Sylvanas, has it been in the most recent ones? I feel like Sylvanas is a kind of, maybe.
Most lists.
Yeah, maybe the most. I think it dropped for a little bit and then came back. But I would agree with that too. It's pretty clunky. I mean, you can never, outside of like maybe the power, you know, if you were running power at the time, you couldn't really do something on that turn with it, right? So it was always a little challenging to actually have it, you know, be impactful, especially against Jade. Every time I played Sylvanas, it was all, you know, it was always after they had like a 6/6 Jade golem, and it's just like, I'm not going to do much with this. I mean, I might steal one, but he's going to have another giant Jade golem. So I can totally see that. But this is interesting. This is definitely, definitely targeting Jade, you know, just more of the shamans and the Jade shaman decks since it's so popular. Would you say this is really great on ladder, or do you think this is just more of a competitive deck?
I mean, Hoi did get to number one on an A with the list.
Okay, awesome.
He didn't finish number one because he decayed afterwards, but he got number one, like, let's say, 3 or so days ago with it. Yeah. I know that Oskarka answered reasonably well with it on ladder. So, yeah, it seems to work, but maybe it's just because it was unexpected. I have no clue. Like now that people know the list, I'm not sure how that changes.
Yeah. What do you think? What do you think about Spellbreaker? Just having silence in the deck.
Yeah, I mean, just has to deal with Vokes and decent in the meta right now. Like kill a Flame Tongue Totem or Cresting Adventure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. I think that sounds at least like my experience too. That's cool. But yeah, so for those of you that can't see it listening right now, it's basically, I would say, Corruption for Mountain Giant, Frost Elemental for Sylvanas. I'm just kind of, I don't want to go through all 30 cards. What else? What else is maybe a bit different?
The Defender of Argus. Hoy's Twitter, just CLG Hoy and find it there.
You can find it there too. Or you can find it on the show notes. I always post the show notes on ChainManV.tv, so you can check it out there. But yep, really good. And for those of you playing against a ton of Jade Shaman, which everybody is playing against a ton of Jade Shaman and Aggro Shaman, check this deck out for sure if you want to have some success. So I brought a Reno Lock 2 that's similar, obviously, because the base package of a Reno Lock is the same. But I decided just to try C'Thun in it, just because I've been trying C'Thun in all kinds of different types of deck recently, and it's, you know, once I get like in this kind of mode, I just like try it in every single kinds of deck, just to, you know, just to see how it fits. And I was doing C'Thun buff paladin and stuff like that, so I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna try in Reno, just because it kind of, you know, there's these 2 and 3 drops and 4 drops that do you know, curve pretty well and can, you know, help fight against some of the Jade, you know, Shaman lists that, or just some of those decks that are just mid-range. So it naturally does that while it's buffing your C'Thun. And then at the end, C'Thun can actually be a finisher, or you can remove the board a lot of times too, as well as go into Draxus after it, right? So I decided to give it a try, and it's actually pretty good. It's surprisingly not bad at all. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's better than the last list that we just saw, but There are maybe a few decks that it is better against just because of the C'Thun finish. And, you know, if Bran lives going into the C'Thun finish, then it's like auto win, like every single time, right? So,
sure.
It's kind of interesting. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever tried this or not.
I mean, like a couple of months ago, actually more than a couple of months ago, but AK Wonder qualified for prelim, so for top 8 for HCT. Playing Reno Lock with C'Thun.
Oh, okay, cool.
And it's been around for like quite some time. I tried it like a month ago or so, and I felt like since Shaman just has Totem Golem and like the C'Thun minions don't really go well against that. Mm-hmm. I can't really play your minions, but you also can't really tap with that deck that much. So it felt kind of weird. But yeah, the deck's been around and seemed decent before, so I could see it coming back.
Yeah, that's true. You definitely don't get to tap much. I mean, maybe a couple times once you're going into like turns 8 and 9. And sometimes you get those games where, but it's not against Shaman, of course. Shaman, you're never tapping. But sometimes you get those games where you can tap to like Twilight Drake. But yeah, so it can be hard to draw C'Thun. But it's nice to have, I mean, there's like a lot of taunt actually in this deck. That's kind of why I ended up playing Crazed Worshipper too. It's not the greatest stats, of course, but it's been nice just, you know, getting some taunt without playing Argus or playing Sunfury, because I don't really have that many targets to play with it that are very efficient. But yeah, anyways, it's a variation that you guys can try. It's only 5 cards from the C'Thun package, and so replacing, you know, like Malin Giant and, you know, some of the taunt minions, at least from the previous list we saw, like there's no Sunfury, there's no Argus, no mind control tech. So the C'Thun cards basically replace those. But I guess I don't really need Emperor in this deck either. I probably could have replaced that.
Emperor Thorason, I don't think is going to be like the Usher of Souls seems like another 5 drop you could put in. Like the 5/6 for 5 for Warlocks, it buffs when a friendly minion dies. Buffs your C'Thun.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that card.
I mean, it's just not worth it because it's like a pit fighter 99% of the time. Yeah, it doesn't even buff C'Thun when it dies.
True.
But I don't know. Like, if you're looking, I wouldn't necessarily cut. I'd probably play Sylvanas over Emperor here, but
yeah,
it's really
I think
a
so
matter
too.
Of preference.
Makes
if you're
going
to get to
sense.
Turn 10, then, I mean, Brand Twin Imps works. Otherwise, it's going to be on turn 8 potentially.
Yeah.
If you Emperor them. which is fine.
When it comes down to it, it's always, it depends on what you draw. Like, if you get Gonzaga's easy game, if you get, you know, like, or actually Brand Gonzaga's super easy game, and if you get Reno, sometimes it's going to be easy game, but if you don't get either of those, it's generally not a good game. At least when most of the time when I play it.
It's very hard when you don't have the taunts, right? As you mentioned, no Argus, no Sun Fury really lowers your chances of stalling, which is kind of what you have to do with the deck.
Yeah. Then you got to, you know, be like 6-0 to be able to pull out some of these wins. It's a lot tougher. And that's why this deck, that's why Reno Lock is actually a solid deck in my eyes, just because it's, you know, it takes skill to play it to a high level or high winning percentage, in my opinion. I don't know what your thoughts are on 6-0. Maybe you disagree, actually.
I mean, there's like a lot of skill in it, but I don't think that the skillful matchups are the matchups that are being played right now. Like, for example, the Reno Lock Mirror is very skillful, but you don't queue that much. And the games against aggro, it's mostly just whether you draw the stuff you need.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
That's a good point. Like, one of the things that I hear too much of on the, like, there's a huge circle jerk in the Reddit community of, like, control takes skill to play and aggro doesn't. The truth is, that is so polarized, like, it's such a polarized way to look at the meta, because if you're a Reno deck against aggro, you're basically playing your cards on curve, and the amount of options you have every turn, pretty much none, right? Like, it's very tough to find options that aren't obvious, because oftentimes you have 1-2 drop that's good, and then the other one is subpar by default. Mm-hmm. So until turn, like, 7, your turns are just planned out. It's, like, really, really clear what you have to do, and so...
There's no turn 7. You have Reno turn 6, and they concede. Well, you don't have Reno turn 6.
Yeah, that's about right.
That's the point, right? Like, that's what I'm going. It's like, before turn 7, there's nothing for you to do. You just play your cards as you curve them in,
well,
and that's
it's like,
it.
Do you get Doomsayer first? Like, it's like this, I mean, 6-0 drew that flow. I mean, he's very good at drawing a bunch of flow charts, right? But, you know, one flow chart is, do you get Doomsayer first, or in the first two turns? If you don't get Doomsayer in the first two turns, do you get Kazakus on 4? If you don't get Kazakus on 4, do you get Reno? If you don't get either any of those things, just GG, like, most of the time.
Bottom right it. Yeah, so exactly. That's kind of my point, right? Like, control doesn't mean it's by default always more skill demanding. And there's an argument to be made for Shaman being actually pretty complex at high levels, more so in the mirror matches. Outside of, like, I feel like the fact that Jade is overtaking Shaman is kind of triggering me, because, like, that takes out a lot of the... Like, a lot of the nuance in trading just go out of the window, where you're like, okay, my 4-drop either eats Jade Lightning or it doesn't, rip. Like, my Drake is dead, for instance. And then it's just, you look at the Shaman's board growing and growing. And they get some of that Curvestone feeling back into the deck, which I think, for all the hate against the aggro deck, it kind of had to figure out its overload mechanics, whereas the Jade just smashes shit down a little bit more consistently. I don't know if that's something you feel, 6-0, but... To me, the Jade package is just not interesting. It's strong, but it's not, like, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, in general, the Jade things don't have many decisions. Like, Jade Druid is also... yeah, I don't know. I don't really like the Jade mechanic.
Yeah, I don't think... I think a lot of people are growing tired of the Jade mechanic at this point. And I think the biggest issue with it, especially when you're talking about mirrors, is that, you know, the Jade... golems end up getting out of control, like, well beyond what the removal capability is of a Shaman, unless you're running Elemental Destruction, which nobody is running that in the mid-range right this second. So, you know, like, once you get beyond the Malishan Portal, maybe two across the board, or maybe in some folks, you know, over time have run even Lightning Storm and get out of the 3 or 4 range, then it's just literally like, okay, who actually gets the right Jade cards at the right moment, who gets the Brand Jade, you know, play at the right moment, and you know, it becomes much more like, you know, arena like or, you know, Curvestone like, and that's,
it's very snowball, right?
Yeah, that's the biggest issue I have with it. It's just, you know, you can't remove the board very efficiently, you know, in the mirror especially. There's just nothing for you to do.
It's very interesting, because if you look at, like, the Jade Druid, right, when they made the mechanic, it was obvious they wanted Jade Druid to be a control deck that was trying to ramp up slowly to huge golems, and instead of going to fatigue, just close out the game by not letting you continue, because they'll punch you in the face for 8 and 9 repeatedly until you're basically dead. And on the flip side, Shaman actually has a lot of tools that work as a control deck. Like, those cards they gave Shamans, like the Jade Lightning, the Jade Chieftain, the Jade Claws, They actually kind of fit a Jade Shaman control deck. The thing is, they also fit a mid-range and potentially aggro deck. Like, the fact that they fit in three archetypes, like, you would never think about building an aggro Jade Druid deck. Like, that would be nonsensical. Like, it would just seem weird to just go for the aggro route on that deck. Maybe there's someone who's going to make it and suddenly it's, like, the new thing. But it just seems odd, right? It just doesn't fit. But for Shaman, it fits across the board in the three archetypes. And Rogue, well, let's not talk about Jade Rogue, right? Like, they just...
Yeah, I think it's just that Jade Lightning is so overpowered. Like,
Yeah.
I think just the card Jade Lightning makes it worse to play all the other Jade cards in Shaman.
It's a swing card. Like, you know, people don't really look at these Jade cards in that fashion, but, you know, we've always been very hesitant or very worried about big swing cards, or not even liked it over time, like BGH, you know, cards that we didn't like, you know, if it was cheap. And that's pretty much what Jade Lightning is, as well as Jade Claw to an extent. That's why Shaman Jade cards are so powerful. They remove something and they put a minion on the board, swinging the tempo completely. And with the brand, with Jade Claw being so cheap too, gosh, the brand plays are just like automatic for Shaman, like super easy for them to pull it off with Spirit and with Jade Spirit and with Jade Claw. So I think that play is the one that's, you know, not talked about a ton. Just the fact that Jade has, or Shaman has that ability more often than Druid or Rogue. And it's crazy at this point. I mean, I've seen people just double Jade Claw, like, with a brand, right? And just, like, literally fill the board with two weapons. It's crazy.
But brand's rotating out, so when the rotation hits, maybe the meta will be a slight bit different. For now, some of the top Shaman decks don't even run Tunnel Chug and Totem Golem, so...
I know.
Just put that into perspective, right? So just remember that that's a thing, and then you might suffer inside a little bit.
Well, if they don't run Tunnel Trog and Totem Golem, this is pretty much an indication of what it's going to be like. And they're still strong, even with it, without it. So insane. It doesn't even matter. Oh, man. This is not
great. But it's
small
time book, and you're aggravates a bit of that package, to be honest. So I think, you know, once, you know, these things are looked at, which, nudge, nudge, I'm hoping is soon. Maybe.
I think it has to be. Yeah.
Maybe we get a bit of a different experience. Because now we're, what, February? We've got March coming up like a month from now. So we don't have another expansion for like 2 months at least. And if you consider the fact that 60 days in the internet world is like 17 years in real life, it's going to be a long 2 months.
Well, we're halfway through. So, I mean, I guess we could talk a little bit about just the general sentiments right now in the community and the playing community. And, you know, in 6.0 can confirm this. It's pretty clear. I mean, you've been seeing on Reddit recently just people starting to get into that state or that mode again, at least the highest competitive players, just where it's just getting ridiculous as to like how much you play. And I can attest to it too. Even not playing in the legend ranks, you know, which I actually try not to these days, you still are playing just insane amount of shaman against it. Like yesterday I was playing a little bit and I literally played 9 straight shaman. And, you know, from what I was watching from some of the Watchstone yesterday, it was, like, ridiculous. I mean, I don't know, 6.0, how about you? Like, what are the statistics if you looked at your tracker?
Actually, we set my stats because my tracker got bugged. But in general, I don't think that the fact that you just play Shaman is, like, that big of an issue. I feel like the issue is that even when you don't play Shaman, the games still feel the same. Like, even the other matchups against, like, Rogue or Warrior... Mm. Some degree, even the Reno decks, because even they just kind of curve you. So, I don't know. I feel like games don't really feel unique right now.
Yeah, there's basically two kinds of decks, right? There's one that's aggressive mid-range, you know, it's like you could put it in that bucket, and then there's one that's just Reno, right? Reno Kasakis. And I think that was exactly your flowchart, if I'm recalling correctly. and because of that, yeah, I think there is a lot of that. But I would actually still be happy if I just played something a little bit different. I wouldn't even mind seeing, you know, a Questing Adventure sometimes and a Van Cleef if it wasn't just the exact same stuff. Because that's the part that gets me. And that's clear what's been bothering people, I think, recently is just, or at least... more so than just, you know, a more homogenous feel of it is playing the same against the same class. Like people really feel annoyed at that. So they'll have to change that. They'll have to do something about that, because that is one of their red flags, is when there's too much of a certain class being played, especially a certain type of deck being played. So we'll have to see when that actually happens. Hopefully it happens in the next, man, I hope the next couple weeks or something like that.
Yeah, I want to see like a 2 weeks ETA on something. Yeah. That would be the best timing, I think, or at least a reasonable timing where they can actually go over the data again if they have to, and then, you know, after 2 weeks, fix it. But we'll see. Whatever they have in store is what they have in store. We'll see if they're hoping the rotation changes things and they're waiting for the, you know.
I actually think that's what's going to happen. Yeah, I think because the huge rotation's coming, they're probably just going to wait until then, which that means another 2 months of this, which is will be. I'll have to just keep playing.
That'll be like an entire year of Shaman Stone, man. After, I think in 2 months, it'll be like a full year.
Oh, that's true. Actually, I didn't even think of that. That is true. After having like a year before that, which was like no Shaman, right?
For the most part. Yeah, it was just so, like an entire year.
That's how they make up for it, dude. Stone. It's about averages.
Let's kill Zoo and bring up our Shaman Overlords.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, anyways, let's move on. We got Tip of the Week here. It's just a new segment. I think this is the first time we actually get a chance to do it. So sure. I figured we would add a segment where, you know, since we have so many of, you know, pros like 6-0 on the show, that we maybe throw out a tip, you know, maybe to, for all the folks that, you know, are in the, you know, rank 5, 10, 15, whatever range, and maybe need a little bit of advice. So I picked maybe a topic that maybe a lot of folks that play Kazakus and Reno might run into a lot, which is, how do you pick the best Kazakus potion? You know, and it sounds like a very obvious thing, and sometimes it is obvious, because like sometimes you're, you know, playing against Shaman, you're in dire need of clearing the board, and it's like, okay, four damage across the board. You know, very clear, right, as to what you want. But then you have to pick that second one. And then sometimes, you know, you have that brand Kazakus play, and there's like nothing going on the board. So it's like, what do I choose in that position, right? So, 6-0, I want to just kind of ask you that question. Like, how do you evaluate picking the best Kazakus potion?
It just depends on the situation. Usually you want to have like, you need to first figure out if you need the potion right away. Like, if you need to play next turn as removal or the same turn even, then you, half the time you just need a 1-mana potion as removal, but yeah, if you need it as removal, that's easy to figure out, or you don't need it as removal the next turn, then you figure out what you can play for tempo. And like, I guess there's like tempo, removal, and value potions. So it's like, if you need it right away, you pick the 1 or 5 mana one and just like try to get any sort of damage. Mm-hmm. If you are on the tempo and you want to just like get more stuff, then just like try to get a 5 mana potion, resurrect 2 minions, and go from there. But if you don't feel like you will play the potion, it's soon anyway, then you probably go for a defensive 10 mana one just to have it, and like a 6 damage AoE or mass right. polymorph. So yeah, just need to figure out when you want to play the potion before you pick the mana cost.
So when you get two of them, so you know, when you get that turn 7 brand Kazakus, generally do you pick a 5 and a 10? Or I mean, and you don't have like this immediate need for, you know, removal or anything. Do you generally pick like, 5-10 or double 5, double 10?
Kind of just imagine that you only pick one and like pick as if you only have one. Mm-hmm. And like after you pick that, you see if that was a potion needed or if that just failed you.
Right, right.
The one you needed, then you can go for like another one for just more tempo or whatever. Like if you need a mass polymorph, you go for 10 mana first, see if you get it. And if you don't, you pick it again and try again. If you do get it, you might just go for a 5-mana tempo potion at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so generally removal or tempo, like those are the two best options.
Yeah, I mean, the times where you play Pern Kazakus and have time for it are probably the games so you need value and not removal.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah.
When you play Pern Kazakus, you probably go for more value.
Yeah. I don't know how many times it's just like, okay, you know, the board's clear. I pick it and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to pick this. And then all of a sudden, you know, he throws down an 8-8 or something like that. I'm just like, damn it. I should have chose that 8 damage one or what, you know, and then, you know, throw down an 8-8 behind it kind of thing. So yeah, I think that's definitely a good general one. There was something I was going to ask you about. So with the resurrection one, are you very cautious about the fact that you've played Doomsayer, for instance? Because a lot of times, right, with these Reno decks, you do get that Doomsayer play beforehand. And anytime I get Doomsayer, I pretty much avoid that resurrection one unless I'm playing, you know, just some kind of, actually a lot of times it's a jade deck, so, you know, which it can help out with at times, even if you get it right, just because they have to remove that. I don't know. Do you ever feel hesitant about that?
I think you don't pick the resurrect minion potion because you play Doomsday. I think it's the other way around. In the matchups where it's relevant, you don't play Doomsayer because of the potion. So it's like, in the matchup that you play Doomsayer, it's get some sort of aggro, and they probably won't let Doomsayer go off, so you are fine with getting it back. And in the pure control matchups, you try just not to play the Doomsayer.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, makes total sense. Yeah,
that's a very good way to look at it, because if I, like, in matchups that are very quick, your best like effects are probably like the AoE, right? If you get like a 1 minute potion, deal 2 damage plus 3 damage, for instance. So you can get like an explosive shot, or you get like 4 armor, deal 2 to everything on a 1 minute potion. Otherwise, it's 4 damage to AoE and then 7 armor. That's what you're looking for against the aggro decks. When you're talking about control, if you're thinking about resurrecting anything, then I think just playing Doomsayer is not the way you want to go. Like, you could still do it against aggro. Like, it's not a bad... It's better than Polymorph against aggro, for instance.
Yeah.
Very often. Not every time, but very often. Or it certainly is better than, like, drawing cards. So... Or adding demons to your hand. But it's not... Like, you probably don't want to be, you know, resurrecting stuff against them if you have the choice.
Yeah. Agreed. I mean, maybe you have a bunch of taunts and... But again, if you get Doomsayer against aggro, it's probably generally okay. Like, and... If you do that, maybe you take armor 2, just additional health.
I wouldn't prioritize it.
Yeah.
It's also, honestly, like, it's about the board texture as well. Because that's the thing with Kazak, is they made him. So, like, I think what's most important is remembering the odds of getting something, right?
Yep.
Like the potions. Like, you have about, if you're popping a potion, you have about 60% chance on a 1 mana potion to get exactly 1 effect, right? If you need a combination of 2 effects, it's about 25%. So.
Really? It's that good?
Yeah, if you want, like, exactly Felbloom and Mystic Rule,
right.
For instance, it's, like, 25% chance to get it.
It's different on 1 mana potions than on, like, the other potions.
Yeah, there's more. That's
1 mana has one less option.
Yeah,
right, so if you go up to, like, the 5 and 10, I think it drops by to 20%.
To get one.
Yeah, 20%. Yeah, it's, like, 50.
That's pretty good, though.
53 to get one.
Okay, 53 to get one and, like, 20 to get 2. So it's still 1 out of 5 to get the exact potion you need. So with 2 rolls on Kazakus, technically, you're a little bit above what you'd anticipate. So I honestly, like, again, figure out what it is you need in the specific case, but remember those odds. Like, that's the most important. Like, remember 60-25 for the 1 mana potion. Remember 53-20 for the 5 mana and 10 potion. Yeah. And then figure out if the risk is worth it if you don't pick up something specific.
Yeah, a lot of times, like Sixa was saying, you end up missing one of them, and then you have to make up for it with the second one. So between the two potions, you usually have what you covered. Yeah, it's kind of funny that way.
Exactly. But,
okay, well, I think that's good advice. I think that's going to be great advice, and maybe some folks that play Kazakus a bunch will be able to heed some of it and get some success out of it. But why don't we move on to topic of the week? And I chose this one this week. You know, obviously, we'll take turns choosing different ones, but I was just thinking about, you know, we've been talking a lot about just, you know, what to do with the classic set and, you know, what to remove and moving, whether we should move cards to wild and not and whatnot. And, you know, I wanted to bring up this subject or topic that we may have discussed a long time ago, but we haven't discussed it recently, which is, given that Hearthstone's been, I think, is this a 3-year anniversary or... Are we going on 4? Gosh, like
we're going on. I guess 4 if you include the beta.
The beta is like half year, so yeah, maybe 3.5. Again, maybe March is like 3.5 or whatever. You know, now that we're coming into that 3-year birthday or anniversary, you know, I think it's viable to take a look at whether, you know, Hearthstone or the team has any plans, or maybe it's a good strategy to have a Hearthstone 2. You know, like a Hearthstone 2.0, instead of continuing with the same title and just continuing to expand it, right? Just with more, expansions and adventures, and continuing to maintain the existing game, right? And I wanted to get what you guys think about that. Just like, do you think Hearthstone would benefit from actually having a completely new product that they, you know, they resell and market and you know, as a completely new product, and just like anything else, like StarCraft 2 or whatever it is, right? Or Diablo 4, whatever. Or do you think, you know, it's better just to continue with the same, you know, the same set that that they continue to maintain, and you know, and we continue to have to fix and, you know, change things like from the original.
So, okay, so let me get this clear. You're proposing that Hearthstone every single year takes all the cards that exist?
No, not every year. Not every year. But
okay, like, well, whatever. Every so often.
Right? Every five years or something like that. Come out with a new product.
Every 3 years, it goes, you know, Hearthstone, here are all the cards we have right now, bam, in the dumpster, and then we start with a new set completely, right? Where it's like an insane rotation. Is that what you mean?
You could look at it that way, or you could look at it as a completely new product. You if you were like in Magic terms, you look at it as maybe just a completely new collection set. You know, like starting, you know, you can still play in Hearthstone. Let's just say we do tournaments, right? You can still play in Hearthstone 1 tournaments. It still exists. It's just there's Hearthstone 2 tournaments.
It's like playing Warcraft 2 and there's Warcraft 3.
Yeah, right? Kind of like that. You know, of course the newest one will probably be more relevant just because it's the newest thing. But it's not like the old thing.
Well, Brood War is more, you know, it's got a lot of traction.
Right now, yeah. Like esports is huge again. So yeah.
If you look at it that way.
Brood War wouldn't have, like, went down if it wasn't for the StarCraft 2 release. So it's like StarCraft 2 didn't happen, then Puto would have just been that popular all the time. So I'm not sure if that's like a example you can use for the idea.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's true. In fact, some people are probably wishing that StarCraft 2 didn't come out. Yeah.
The problem I mean, of course, it would have, like, it would be a revamp, because I'm coming from this looking at the way the collections are acquired right now, and I'm like, there's no way this works out unless you give players, like, hey, pay $60 up front, here are all the fucking cards, have fun with it. But, like, a portion of the fun of Hearthstone is collection. So if you launch you create a new client and you call it Hearthstone 2.0, and you give it a new card set completely, so the basic set that you used to know in Hearthstone 1 is kind of gone.
I mean, it's a new game. You know what I mean?
Right, like, it's a new game, but it's got the same mechanics, though, right? Like taunt, charge.
It doesn't have to. Like, maybe. So let's just throw it out there. You know, and I'm not saying that this is the right thing to do either. I'm just kind of throwing it out there just for more of an interesting discussion. But what if Hearthstone 2.0 has all these aura things that we've been talking about? Has these trinket things we're talking about? You know, it's not exactly the same. I mean, it's not literally just new cards and new expansions. It's not that. It's actually there's new elements that they introduce. That's you know, an advancement of what Hearthstone 1 was.
So gear, like you would be playing, your hero would matter more. Right? Let's take an example where, you know, you get to actually use cards in your deck that equip, they're actually equipment, so your character can be wearing a robe, a hat, a shield, or whatever.
Whatever it is. Like, it could be
so
any of those.
That's
things.
Like so you mean an entirely new system that's just completely distinct from Hearthstone 1. And then
I mean, you could still have the 9 classes. It's just they're adding stuff to it. You know, like, I think they have the freedom to add, like, a lot of things. And they can start from scratch. Like, they from the standpoint of our expectations, a very new product, anything's for a game. Like, they can go and add stuff. And we're just like, okay, this is new. So we accept it as being new. Not, like, looking at it from Hearthstone 1. Because every time they make a change now, we have to, like, take into account, like, oh, what about the old players coming back? You know, what about, you know, people have already spent money on packs? What if they don't understand this new mechanic, like red mana or, you know, whatever it is, right? They have to take into account. If it's a brand new product, you don't have to worry about
Hearthstone
that.
Hearthstone 2.0 advanced rulebook. So it's like, it just uses more complex mechanics because the Hearthstone 1 was for mobile players.
Oh, that's true. Hearthstone 2.0 is not mobile. It's PC only. How hilarious would that be?
You have to do ADAD to dodge spells like fucking Frostbolt coming in.
Yeah. Sixo, what do you think? What do you think about just a new product?
I think that, like, the idea, like, of having more mechanics in Hearthstone would be nice, but I don't think that the game would survive a change like that. Like, I think if you just, like, let's say you have a new game, you have to buy a full new collection, the old game is basically dead and no one would support. Like, it's still, the servers will be live for a couple more years, but no one cares about it anymore. People would be just like, no, I don't want to spend like $300 again to start playing. And it's like, I don't think the game would survive that.
See, how does Magic survive? Like, just giant collection changes. I know, but that's what I mean. Essentially,
it doesn't do giant collection changes. It doesn't do
Magic
that.
Magic is basically what we have right now.
It's exactly the same with Standard.
Okay. I thought it was like a lot. Like, I thought the changes were much more drastic, or at least each set was like almost its own, you know, set. Like, in tournaments happen within just those set of cards.
So I'll try to explain it to you, right, in a more concrete term. So in Hearthstone, you have like, well, like, we have like, what, 7, 8 sets? I don't even know. We have very little, right? And Magic, what they do is they have what's called blocks. And in a tournament, a block consists of three sets, mm-hmm. right? And if you take these three sets together, usually you're allowed like two blocks per standard. I don't know if that changed at all, but it used to be that you're basically allowed to use six sets together mm-hmm. to create a deck in standard. And when the rotation hits, one of the blocks goes away. So three sets go away at the same time. And then you're left with the most novel block, which is three sets. And then you start a new block and you add that to standard. So it's like, it's really rotation by block and not by set. So it's like if I told you that when the, kind of like what we're doing, right? When the rotation hits, we're not losing just TGT or just like the most recent. We're losing three sets at once, which is a block of a year. The only difference is that in Hearthstone, it's based on the yearly releases. And it says, here's this arbitrary notion. We have beginning of year, last, like end of year. This is what we rotate. Whereas in Magic, it's like, we're going to create this set called Blee Blah Blue, and we're going to have set Blee, set Blahs, and set Blue, and they're all going to go away at the same time. In Hearthstone, we're just creating one set at a time, and they're not connected. It's not like League of Explorers, and then the Explorations of the Depths or whatever the fuck, and then the like Stranglethorn Jungle, which thing, would be connected thematically and then rotate out at the same time. In Hearthstone, it's like, here's this Medivh dancing to disco followed by Old Gods or whatever. It's like, you know, what is this? It makes no, there's no connection to
it. Yeah, yeah. So, no, maybe that would be smart. Thematically, they kept it like just three at a time.
But they're doing it with Year of the Kraken. They're trying to just make it feel. But the thing is, like, nobody gets it. It's like Year of the what? Kraken Yogg, I guess? I mean, what the fuck is this?
Year of the Rooster. I mean, what are you talking about?
Well, the one before that.
No, no. I know. But yeah, so you're right. Like, we don't, we definitely don't get that kind of lumping together of the three, just all the releases that they had this past year. So I don't know, maybe they should. Maybe they should go down that route where it's like thematically together, so it's very clear as to what disappears, you know.
I mean, at least give me, like, in every single set you put in that year, a Kraken. I don't care if it's called like Small Kraken, Kraken Tentacle. Like, every set in that year needs to have a reference to the whole rotation block. Cause
Small Time Kraken?
Small time.
If you control a tentacle, gain plus +5. It's like, what is this? Man. But yeah, you know what I mean.
Please,
like,
don't.
I feel like I'd like there to be some if you know, you're the rooster. I want an upgrade on Angry Chicken. I want a mechanical chicken. I just want one chicken per set. Like, give me something to tie them all together into a meme fashion that's very Hearthstone like.
Yeah,
and I think people can better understand rotation blocks that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes, I don't know if it's easy at all or if people are just going to be confused, but.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, but it would at least, be easier to figure out. You know, right now it's like, I always have to be reminded, like, what's going to be pulled, you know, in April or whatever. It's like, and it's just purely based on a date, you know, like when these things were released. It would be a little bit easier to figure out if we had a little bit more indicator within the decks themselves or within the themes themselves as to what's going to be reset. Okay. Well, anyways, it sounds like, I mean, I don't think they will be doing this. I don't think this, I mean, they don't even have the bandwidth to even create a complete new product in parallel with maintaining the existing one. So it's not something that I felt like, you know, they could even do at this point, but, you know, it's definitely a different type of product release that, you know, is something that to be looked at, but yeah, buying new cards, I think that type of model of content and purchasing content, I think it makes it a lot harder to have different versions of it without everybody immediately going, well, what happened to all my old cards, man, am I screwed? You know, it's like,
yeah that's
that,
a problem.
That's in a way that, yeah, I mean, you still could do stuff, you can still play the game, but for the everybody's going to be moving on to Hearthstone 2 at that point. Okay, well, anyways, let's move on. But before we go on to the next segment, which is going to be Mechatorps Workshop, I did want to give a shout out to some of the folks that, or a lot of the folks that listen to the show on iTunes. You can leave a 5-star review to really help folks find Valuetown when they're searching for a Hearthstone podcast. And I want to give a shout out to just a few folks that have left 5-star reviews as well as great comments for us. Ebullion, the Gary Scott, JBall2K, thank you so much for doing that. And, you know, if you guys want to support the show and do listen to it there and want to leave us a 5-star, I highly encourage that you do, because that would be amazing for us. But on top of that, supporting the show, of course, that, you know, we are 100% supported by Patreon, which you can see at patreon.com/valuetown. And we've got like a bunch of awesome patrons right now, and of course we got to give some shout outs to them because of how amazing they are. Our legend producers, Mike T, Lewis G, Dean P, continuing on, thank you so much guys for doing that. You guys are the cream of the crop, even with all these awesome other patrons that we got. But I want to give a shout out to a few others too. Ray Dan, Bobby D, Bryce L, Vince F, Thomas O, Greg W, Eugene L, and Tim K. And thankfully, we've still made our milestone. So that's what time it is right now, guys. So, you know, Six says first time getting to experience this. And everybody, every week, I mean, we get at least 4 or 5 comments every week saying how much they love this segment. So it's time. This is what we do. We smile for a good 30 seconds here.
30? Dude, yeah. I swear,
20 seconds.
20, and now we're 30. Next time, it's going to be 5 minutes.
That's the next milestone, five-minute milestone. All right, here we go. Starting now. All right. That's the inner happiness of playing Hearthstone in us. It comes out every time we do Milestone, except for our very, very
okay,
our very creepy looking smiles.
That's our inner yes. Hearthstone love.
Exactly. Well, that's for you guys. That's for the patrons. And again, thank you so much, guys, for supporting the show. The show wouldn't happen without you guys. And if you want to support it, go ahead and go to patreon.com/valuetown and take a look and, you know, make a pledge. That would be super amazing for us. And we're trying to get to Laughstone, which is actually, I think we're about $20 or $25 away from Laughstone, which you can imagine what that is, guys. It's laughing for 30 seconds straight. And that's actually going to be pretty hard to actually just laugh for 30 seconds.
Yeah, as long as we never get to Dance Stone, we'll be fine.
Dance Stone? Right? Oh my God. The audio folks would totally. Actually, audio folks are missing out on Smile right now. So, yeah. Laugh Stone is definitely.
Well,
there
know there's an awkward silence with us looking at a camera. I guess that translates over.
Yeah.
Dance is just lost on them.
They could. They just have to hop on their PCs. They can see it. Okay, well, anyways, let's move on to Mechatorp's Workshop, and this is the segment, guys, where we come up with our own custom cards in hopes of Blizzard maybe taking a look, maybe pulling on some of these cool concepts that some of our viewers, as well as, you know, myself and Noxious, come up with. So let me go over here. Today we've got a couple from Adam A, one from Halfried H, and then a couple from Noxious's Twitch chat, which is pretty interesting. So let me bring up the first one is Shatari Peacekeeper from Adam A, and it's right here. Okay, so it is a paladin card. It's a 4-drop, a 1/4 stat, rare card, battle cry, swap attack with an enemy minion. So kind of like Aldemon, a little bit has maybe some elements of Aldemon, but it benefits greatly, though, instead of Aldemon just transforms something, right? This basically humiliates them and then actually gets the benefits of it. So, Sixa, what do you think about this card?
Yeah, I mean, the idea is nice. It would have to have more than one attack because with one attack, it's just too overpowered.
Yep.
But if it was like maybe 2 or 3, 4, maybe that's like reasonable. I don't know. But like as a 1/4, it's definitely too strong.
So it should be a 2/4? What were you saying?
I'm not sure. Probably.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
What it gives the other minion. Yeah.
It's 1/4. It's just...
it's basically humility. It's crazy. It's like Aldor on crack.
It's pretty good. That's pretty much... I mean, the fact that it could just become like a 4-mana 6/4 battle cry, reduce the attack of an enemy minion by like to 1 is pretty crazy. I like the concept, you know, the fact that it actually gives them the attack, and they're still able to silence it off if they want to. Like, it's not like a permanent buff that's going to be there forever, so I don't mind that. The thing that's funny to me is that, like, as Sixo mentioned, at one attack, it doesn't even give them a minion that's able to kill the Peacekeeper over any amount of time, right? Like, you give them a two attack minion, at least it's 2 swings before the Shatari dies.
Okay. Yeah.
After you played it at turn 4, you have a 7/4, they have a 1/7.
Yeah. Like, It's pretty. it's pretty like, good.
GG. Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah, I think it's an interesting concept, though. I'd like to see this type of card. That'd be pretty sweet. In fact, I'd rather see this kind of card than Oldemon, to be honest.
Yeah.
It would at least be in line with Aldor and what they generally do, right? With Humility and just all the other cards that essentially just remove attack. So
I mean, I think the theme of the card should probably change. Like, I'm not, because I just want to go full lore nerd on these guys, because I just like WoW lore. But a Peacekeeper doesn't have any business swapping its own attack with the enemy, right? Like, some construct might do that. Some animated construct or whatever might be able to do something. Because this is way too weird. It's like, I'm a Peacekeeper and I've got one attack. So it's like you have a bouncer at a bar, right? Picture that guy, right? He's a bouncer at a bar and he's like absolute shit at defending himself until a really big dude comes along. He's like, I'm stealing your strength, dude. And he just like saps the strength of the big dude coming into the bar and then he bounces him out. It's like, the bouncer has to be strong.
He's a magical peacekeeper.
You probably have to make him like another theme, like an animated guardian of Shittrath or whatever. Whatever. That's kind of what I'm saying. But the theme, I mean, the ability itself is cool. I just don't think it's on the right shell.
Okay. All right. So let's take a look at the next one here. We've got, let's see, it is Mirror Totem.
Oh, shit.
Like Shaman needs anything, but Mirror Totem is a 3-mana, 3/1 totem, rare card, and Battlecry gain the stats and abilities of all friendly totems. Wow.
I'm piecing the fuck out.
Okay, this one is way too powerful. Like, I don't even know. I mean, it would have to be like a 0/1 or something like that. For
how do you use it? Is it that powerful? I'm not sure. It's just like, how many totems are you expected to have when you play it?
One totem golem, let's say. It's like a 6/5.
I mean, it doesn't even matter if you have one. It's still great. Like, you mana tide totem.
Let's assume you have only flame tongue, right? Let's assume you have only manatide. Spell damage. Spell damage is like a 3-mana 3/3 with spell damage.
Okay,
not that
if you have a spell damage totem, you win the game anyway. So, yeah. Why even care?
Well, even if it, like, let's just say it's Manatide Totem, right? You gain the stats too. So this thing's not dying. Like,
it's a 3/4, yeah.
Yeah, you get 3/4, and then if you have like two totems, then this thing's like a 3/6, right?
It would be a 3/5. It depends if they have three health or two health.
Yeah, yeah.
All I'm saying is like Totemic Might makes this guy pretty cool. I like the fact that it is like a Totemic Might card. I'll give it that much. I think it's fucking fantastic that there's like this one card that's created that makes you want to play Totemic Might because you can double up on the health gain.
It's too powerful though. It should be gain like stats of like a single totem or something like that. Stats and ability of a single totem, because it'd be a 3/3 with whatever ability that totem had. I think I'd be okay with that.
Be worded in a way where it doesn't have any basic stats, like faceless. For example, like faceless when you play it doesn't
shambler,
have the same HP.
Yeah. Okay.
By nature, so
sure.
It's like if you play one totem, it's just the same sets as a totem.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know how you would word it, but yeah, I guess it shouldn't have basic stats.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But yeah. Definitely interesting concept though. Just more of a totem centric type of shaman.
I mean,
which we ever since Tuskar changed, we pretty much haven't had a totem heavy totem. You know, just using fusion and all those cards that were, it was kind of cool during that time. It was just too powerful, right?
Yeah, I mean,
actually, Sixo, you were using it for the. I think you were one of the first people to use.
Yeah, I played it fusion. Like the week after release at the first major, which was Dreamhack Austin.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the issue isn't that Tuskar cycled out. Tuskar wasn't even that great in the deck. It's just that the expansions just like power creep, so other shamans became stronger.
Mm, gotcha. Noxious, you were gonna say something? You're about to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, the fact that this is a totem in and of itself means you can play the second one and just double up, you know, create like a mirror totem. There have been attempts at designing a card like this in the past, but they involved, you know, consuming the totem. So you would kill them, put him on this one guy. So you would like put your eggs in one basket and the totem
like
would have like
terror type of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's kind of a void terror effect, which of course is pretty. Like, why would Shaman want to lose their board unless you find a way to give it charge or whatever? So it's kind of an interesting concept, but it's tough to make like playable without breaking it.
Okay. Well, those two were from Adam A. So thanks so much, Adam, for showing us those. The next one's from Helfried H., which is Hallowed Priest, which is, sorry, Hallowed Witch, which is a priest that is a 2-mana 4/4. So it's got the Millhouse stats. And then the effect, actually a rare card, and the effect is the enemy hero is immune. So this is the, this would be like the first card that actually makes your opponent's hero immune, I believe. Anything else immune? Yeah, I think that this is it, right? This is like global immune. So as long as this is alive, so it's meant to, I guess, get a 2-for-1 on the board, essentially, then the hero, you know, obviously the hero cannot be damaged. What do you think about this? Think so?
Yeah, so Wayne Internet was actually talking about a similar card that existed in Magic. It was just like this card that was super overstated, but you couldn't win the game while it's on the board. And that card ended up being very broken just because you always get bored, basically, just by having it overstated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That card is different because it just doesn't just say you can't win the game, but you can't even deal damage while it's on. Yeah, I'm actually unsure because it's like a pretty poor draw later on, but it just seems too strong to play on turn two. So it's like a totem golem without overload and just one more stat. So yeah, I think it's just like into the early game and then you just go face afterwards.
But if you trade it in. The interesting thing would be is given that's priest, like, do you buff this thing? Like, do you put powered shield on this thing?
Oh, it's a priest card. I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That's the insane part. Like, that's what makes it really, really good. Because it doesn't die, and you probably don't lose board ever. If, I mean, I'm exaggerating because there are, you know, hex and devolve say, you know, screw you. But the point is, it's just a very solid minion. It does what Wormist Agent wants to do, but without the requirement of being a dragon. Like, having a dragon.
This is why you play Purify, guys. This is it. This is the reason right here. but yeah, I think it makes it really interesting.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, you can't, I mean, you have that decision. You basically, you need to sacrifice this guy just to be able to really cash in on your tempo, or you just keep this and continue growing the tempo
actually,
lead you have.
This card is like super unplayable, right? Because Priest can't kill 4 attack minions. So once you play that, you can never kill it off. So you just like the opponent just armors up, passes for the rest of the game, and you die to fatigue every time. And Tomb doesn't even work on friendly minions. So yeah, you need a minion that the Priest can kill himself. Like if you play that, the warrior just armors up for the next 30 turns that you can't win, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, okay. Well, there's got to be a card that you can. I mean, you have to. I guess you'd have to have something that buffs it.
Well, you can Holy Fire it if you want. Technically,
yeah, you could Holy Fire it. You could Kazakus and do some spell to it.
Polymorph, sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. The counterplay is hero power. That would be so awesome. Okay. Well, anyways, that's interesting. I mean, but these are the type of cards I think are interesting. You know, really changes like how you look at. And how not only to play this card, but how this card affects many other scenarios. So, yeah, actually, I really like how this is designed, or at least the problems this presents. It's got, you know, a little bit of Dirty Rat feel to it in some, you know, way because of that. You know, it doesn't have the same function at all, but it affects other aspects of the game, which is cool. Okay, well, let's see. The next one is Twitch Chat. This is Noxious's Twitch Chat. They came up with... Sentry. Why don't you intro this?
So I want to preface this by saying that the process of making the card was the most interesting because I was reading Ben Brode's post on Reddit about design, space, you know, complexity and depth. And I was trying to explain to the chat because I get like tweets and private messages and emails that, you know, somebody says, hey, I made 12 cards or 20 cards. Look at them and tell me what you think. And they're cards like, you start the game with 40 health and then you draw an extra card at the beginning of each turn. But if you have 5 or more cards, you discard 1 card and you lose 2 health. And I'm like, so this card, I'm sure, is fucking amazingly balanced and it's great and fantastic. But the problem you're running into right now is that it doesn't work in Hearthstone because it's too much wording for an effect that doesn't need to be that word, like that word heavy, right? And I was trying to explain that to the chat. So what I did is I went through the process of telling, like, we tried to create a card from the bottom up.
Right.
Because you can usually go and say, you know, I want to make a Murloc Paladin card, right? And I'm sure when Blizzard made Anything Can Happen, They weren't thinking, let's make a 10-cost paladin spell. They started with, let's make a Murloc paladin card. And what could that be? And then they came up with the idea. But they didn't start with the mana cost or, you know, what they wanted the card to do initially. And so we started with the very, like, the exact opposite, which is, let's start with the mana cost. Let's start with the archetype. People said they wanted a control card. I asked them to vote on the class. They straw polled. They voted for Hunter. So they wanted a control Hunter card. And then I asked minion, weapon, spell. They said minion. So they want a control Hunter minion. And, you know, we went for rarity to make it more niche. They chose epic because it doesn't work in every single deck as opposed to a common card that tends to. And so by going through this elimination process, we came up with people wanting a control Hunter minion epic that would have taunt and have to do with secrets. And so we ended up kind of brainstorming with the chat and we settled on this card, which so it's a 5-mana 3/6 with taunt. Whenever you play a secret, so you have to play it from hand, you destroy a random enemy minion. Easy so it shot. Gives you like a free deadly shot. So on turn 8, you can play this with Cloaked Huntress and dump your secret hand. However, if you're a hunter and you've been keeping the Cloaked Huntress and a bunch of secrets in your hand on turn 8, I mean, you probably are fucked. But you know, if you did, if for whatever reason hunter control becomes a thing, then big reward, you get to wipe out the enemy board and do funny stuff. And worst case scenario, it's a 5-mana 3/6 with taunt on curve. And if it lives one more turn, you play a secret, you can kill something on top of it. So it was like a very well-rounded card across the board with some combo potential, which I thought was interesting. And this is Twitch chat, you know, voting and brainstorming with a ton of ideas and we picked and choose.
Twitch designs Hearthstone, basically. Yeah. Okay, Sixo, what do you think of this card?
Yeah, it's like, it needs to be studied in a way where if it depends on 5, the opponent most likely has an answer to remove it. With 3/6, that might just be good enough. Like, it might just be where it's supposed to be, but it needs more testing. I'm not quite sure if the stats are perfect, but they might be. Just like, it shouldn't feel like it's too high HP where, like, half the time the opponent can't answer it and they just lose.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think 3/6, you know, like, I've been obviously playing Crazed Worshipper a lot recently with the whole Cthulhu thing with Buffadin and stuff, and it's actually really nice to have that 6-statted. You know, we haven't really gotten a chance to experience it very consistently outside of Druid, right? Just having a taunt with that health stat, and it's really resilient, especially with this kind of aggro meta that we're seeing. So I think this card isn't even bad just to have to throw out there sometimes. And then on top of that, if you can save coin and then you end up with a Huntress on turn 3 and then maybe you save like one of your secrets and then you coin into this, then I mean you get big swings, especially if your trap is a freezing trap too, then it's insanely good, right?
Yeah, I mean if it lives, right? Like that's the point, is it's the type of card that doesn't do anything on curve because you can't play a secret with it unless somehow you have Cloaked Huntress left over. And it does so much if it lives and you have the right cards to go with it. Bro, like, Hunter doesn't do that very well, but you know, well, if it happened to, then...
Well, my point was, it doesn't even have to live. You can actually make plays on this play if you actually have the Huntress on the board.
Right, but it's very difficult to...
Yeah, it's situation. It's a very, you know, I don't know, pretty rare situation, I guess. But those are the kind of plays that you just win games. Like, literally, you win games in that one play because it's such a huge tempo swing. Yep. You kill something, you add a taunt like this, and you get to put a freezing trap on the board. That's pretty crazy.
Seems good.
Yeah, seems pretty good.
Seems good. Until you realize you're at 5 health and there's a pirate board and a lava burst, then suddenly it's not as good.
It's definitely something a hunter needs, though, right now. Like, a hunter needs that kind of... I mean, I don't know if it's exactly this, but it needs one of those type of situational, very powerful tempo play that I think it's missing right now. Yeah, it's. I could see it. I could see them maybe trying to do something. It would at least be kind of, you know, again, secret centric. Right now at 5, we have the, what was it, the Avian Watcher?
Avian Watcher. Yeah.
And the Avian Watcher is, what's the stats on the Avian Watcher? I forget. It's like.
It's a 4/6
+1/+1. +1/+1, right? Yeah.
It becomes a 4/7 with taunt, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah, that card I played around with for a while too, but it was just nothing to do behind it. Like, that was powerful enough, but...
Well, again, on turn 8, with Cloaked Huntress, you get a 3-4, a 4-7, and, like, 2 secrets that are reactive. Like, it's actually not bad, but the point is, like, you never get to play them as combo. You know, you'll play this one as much of a combo piece as you'll do the Avian Watcher, which is never. So it has to have some measure of impact that you can control a bit more. And the Event Watcher requires that your secrets are not triggered. So you really have to have a specific secret, and the opponent needs to not trigger it. And given that that's often Snake Trap where you don't have a board, you're probably dead right now without a board at that point. So
that's true.
It's been very difficult to make that secret work.
Okay, yeah. Okay, the last one we have here, and again, this is from Noxious's Twitch chat. You want to introduce this one?
Sure. So this is a priest card, a combo priest card. People wanted a combo card. They wanted it to be a priest card. I asked, you know, weapon, minion, or spell. They opted for weapon. I asked for the mana cost. They said 10. So we had to design a 10 cost priest weapon that had to do with combo spells, that had to do with combo and the shadow theme. So they wanted a damage related spell.
Oh my God.
Or a potential combo piece for, like, you know, Mind Blast Priest. And it took so long to iterate something that didn't feel like it was either too good or too bad, because it's like a 10 cost weapon has to be good, but it can't. I mean, it has to do something retarded. Like, otherwise, it's unplayable. So what we went for, we had, like, so many iterations. Like, it has +5 spell damage, and it would draw a card when you played a spell. You know, something like combine Malagos and Gaddis and Auctioneer in one card, and it's boring. It's not fun.
Yeah.
So the current version of the card is a 10-mana 2/6 weapon for Priest that costs 6 while you're in Shadow Form. So you want to play Shadow Form in your deck. And if it costs you 6 on turn 10, that means you have 4 open mana, and the card reads, whenever you cast a spell, cast an extra copy of it. So you would, you know, if you play Thoughtsteal, replay Thoughtsteal. You would, if you played Mind Blast, 2X. Play 2 Mind Blasts.
Sure.
So it would always double up your spells. In the case of an effect like Mind Control, it wouldn't work. Kind of like Bran Cabal Shadow Priest that fizzles on the second Battlecry. This would fizzle on cards like Shadow Madness, Potion of Madness, because the point of the card is not to be used in those archetypes. So that's like a creative way to add potential to combo decks without making you want to do it, and it also makes you want to play Shadow Form, because right now there's not much of an incentive.
I feel like it's really powerful.
It feels that way until it's not. Like,
well, no, I don't think it's overpowered. I think the balance wise it seems fine to me. I just think that the issue is that, like, it's just the Hearthstone is very simple, and people want to keep it that way, so they won't print any weapons for other classes. So this will never happen. Like, this has to be, like, somehow made into a spell or a minion. Because
I mean, they've done Medivh with Atiash, but that's a neutral card. I'm pretty sure at some point. Yeah, yeah. It's I'm like, pretty sure at some point we might see something, but
well, if we did,
like, maybe weapons that summon minions that summon weapons, but I don't think they will ever directly print weapons for other classes.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, they're definitely very hesitant to do that, and I mean, I think they've even come out and said it, right? Like, I would be surprised if we do see at least a priest weapon anytime soon. But okay, I mean, it's definitely interesting. It doesn't. I mean, there's still a factor when it comes to combo cards of drawing with priests. So you still have to figure out that issue. And a card like this, you know, if this is what your deck was built around, the people just obviously save ooze for it, right? It's just like Medivh, you know, if they know you have Medivh in your hand, they're never going to use, like, ooze until, you know, until this comes out. Especially this is the only weapon, so of course they wouldn't even use ooze.
Yeah.
So that's the part that was that might be difficult, but it's cool. It's definitely an interesting way of like incentivizing you to do Shadow Form, you know, and
Yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, like, the previous card, the Darkspear Sentry, and this Anathema weapon, those were the creation of Twitch chat through a very messy process of brainstorming. Right. And I think it's interesting that when you make people vote for certain things, you're then forced, like, in weird constraints where you have to come up with these really wonky things. And this is the type of card that comes out of it. When you go bottom up with an idea without having any, like, notion of where it's going to end up, and you don't have, like, a themed expansion, for instance, you can come up with really cool concepts. And that's why I was kind of interested in the experiment, and I'm eager to repeat it at some point.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. All right. Well, anyways, guys, thanks for submitting all those cards. We had quite a few. We've had a lot of emails and card submissions lately, and we're not going to get to all of them today, so we'll have to save some for next week. But keep them coming. It's been awesome getting a chance to see you guys doing that. And you can send those to valuetown@chainmanb.tv. If you guys have some Mechatorps workshop cards you guys would like to present, think are awesome, as well as questions for us each week, which we're about to go into Q&A right now. And we're taking emails these days, so not so much live ones, just given that we have so many listeners for our Value Town, we want to make sure we include them. So this week, we've got an email from Spooky, who said, in one episode many months ago, Noxious said that Cho'Gall was made unplayable because the effect is too strong. What's the point of making a card then? I don't really see this as a fun card either. So could you, what, so you could say it was made for the casuals to have fun besides killing yourself with Cho and Doom. I have fun doing that. What do you mean? No. let's talk about Cho'Gall. 6-0. How far away is Cho'Gall from being a viable card?
I think it's like, I mean, obviously it's just not good enough to be playable in any meta, but I think if the meta was slower, it would be close to being playable. But right now it's like, don't even try. Like, what's the point of playing a 7 mana card that when you die on turn 5? Like,
Yeah,
like
in a slow meta, a card like that could see play, like when you have some stuff that combos with it.
Mm-hmm. You have to, but yeah. We'd have to have heal though, right? Heal has to be present somewhere for us to play a card like that.
Yeah, I mean, you need a ton of healing. It's because that's the thing is the amount of. So, what the funny thing about the card is that let's assume you're not playing Reno Lock, right? And you're putting this in your deck. Then it does what you want it to. If you're playing Reno Lock, you just look at this and say, oh, you're just a worse Ink Master Solia right now.
Right.
So exactly. You have to at least find a really good spell to justify. And you don't have like a Pyroblast in the class that just lets you push some crazy amount of burst. Like your 10 cost spell is an AoE clear, which kills Cho'Gall. Incidentally, that's not what you want to be doing with your health that turn most of the time. So even in a slower meta, you'd have to find like the perfect spell, like Shadow Flame, to use it with, and then there are better outlets for Shadow Flame already. So it's difficult to.
I think
they'd have to make a spell that makes you want to go, fuck yeah, I'm playing Cho'Gall right the hell now. You know, like you'd have to find it.
Well, it has to be a swing turn, like so. It can't be like a 10 mana spell. It'd have to be like something that does. I would imagine something that does 5 damage, and something that's in that 4 or 5. Health range, you know, right? 4 or 5 mana range. I think
Blast
that
Crystal
would be
Potion,
good.
But I mean, what?
Yeah, really? But that kills it. That kills it too, right? Like,
no.
Fellfire? Blast Crystal. But that isn't Cho'Gall 7 though. Yeah, so that's Cho'Gall 7. So Blast
but you can
Crystal
use your health.
4
that's
health.
The point.
Okay.
Did you go Cho'Gall, yeah. Blast Crystal, 3 mana card? But the question is, like, what 3 mana card do you weave in at the end of that sequence?
I mean, I'm looking at turn 7 play. I'm not looking at turn 10 play.
Well, Siphon Soul, Shadow Flame are known to be like the best possible outcomes, pretty much, I think, right now. Maybe I'm wrong, 6-0, but I think they're the best.
Siphon, you'd only take 3 damage, right?
So. No, I play Cho'Gall because it's just like not a good card, but maybe it would need other spells to work with than the current ones Warlock has.
Yeah. It's missing support cards, basically. They could have made it really, really good, but they chose to be... that's a card that makes some spells you want to make uncreatable, because then, hey, what if this is too good? That's a fear. Like, you can't... I guess with... Like, I've actually tried that card in some weird mid-range lock with Karakazam, whatever the fuck of that card, the name of that card is. It's like you get a 7-7, a 3-3, a 2-2, a 1-1. It's like, hey, here's my huge board on turn 7. It's done stuff in casual games, but in competitive play, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it would be nice. Like Cho'Gall, when Cho'Gall first came out, I was really excited about that card. I thought that was a very good opportunity for a potentially late game Warlock or even a mid-range Warlock to get a swing that would be... You know, really great for that. Unfortunately, right now it's just like all board clearing stuff for the most part for Warlock. And there's, you know, if you look at the Warlock minions, they're not good at all. Like if you look at, you know, there's only like Enforcer and I mean, what else do we play right now? Like,
well, Enforcer is basically
Imp Gang Boss,
Cho'Gall, right?
Yeah, Imp Gang Boss. I mean, there are not very many great minions to play in the classic set, and even just the all the expansions together right now. So it's very hard to play some, you know, more this kind of mid-range or some kind of board-centric Warlock, not so necessarily Zoo, but something board-centric where you can actually utilize Cho'Gall that's a little bit later. So I feel like a lot needs to change before you are able to play Cho'Gall. And Reno going away too, it's just like you better be adding Healbot back or something similar to Healbot for Warlocks to have a little bit more variety. Otherwise, it's like they're going to turn into Hunter. It's Hunters and Rogues. You just die, you know, like after taking phase damage like 4 or 5 turns. So
maybe it's fine. Maybe it's okay.
Yeah, maybe it's okay. All right, Ahmed N. Asks, what do you guys think the average number of turns of a Hearthstone game should be? I ask this as I think Blizzard likes having an aggro meta where a game finishes before turn 10. Really? Turn 5 to be exact, as it caters to the market segments of playing on phones and tablets. Do you think average turns is a KPI they have when testing to keep the game short?
Yeah,
it's a good question. It's a good question.
So KPI, for those who are not familiar with the term, is key performance indicator, which means it's just like a metric you use to calibrate basically your game, right? And some of the variables in it.
Yeah, what do you think, Shinxo?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, since everyone hates Reno decks, the perfect turn where games should end is 5. But other than that, obviously, like I think that like between 8 and 11 is a good deck. Obviously, you know, sometimes control matches can be grindy, but I think like if the average turn like game would end on like turn 9 or so, that would be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, they definitely keep track of that Blizzard the stats, but I think right now it's a little too early. I think the game has decided a little too early in the current meta.
Or too late. It's funny because like there's no average length anymore. It's either, hey, this is now on turn 5, or here we are 35 turns later, and I'm on to my 7th Kazakus potion.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my god, can we please like pick one middle ground?
But that's fine, right? Because it's like one out of like 100 games that goes that grindy.
Right. So it goes like, very long.
I think it's fine having like those games occasionally, as long as it's not too frequent.
And occasionally, meaning when you play Champion Beyond Ladder, is basically what you mean. I definitely love those long games. But I think they take it into account. I don't think they necessarily take it into account when they're designing the game.
Well, they are.
You think so?
The Jane mechanic is 100% them trying to control the game length. It's them just trying to say, here's this control deck we're making, and we're going to fucking give you the tools to end the game. Like, to them, the Jade mechanic was definitely a way for a control deck to just shut, like, to finally close out the game before turn 35. Because Warrior, for all the good it was, just dragged on its win condition no matter what it was playing up against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. They definitely wanted to contain that. Even contain mill decks, contain all these different types of things. And a long game is definitely one of the things that Jade Druid, Jade Shaman would contain for sure. I hate to think of it that like they would do that because it really shouldn't play a role. But when you're designing phone like mobile games, I know for a fact that yes, like your average time of like session time is definitely something that you take into account. So that's a bummer. Yet another reason why, you know, like design is limited by mobile. But it'd be interesting to hear like them actually answer that question. I'd actually love to hear one of them, you know, answer that question. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to answer. You know, I think you think anybody would answer that question if we asked them that? Given the community's
double-edged sword, man.
Given the community's backlash towards like it being mobile.
The community, like I'm telling you, Reddit's post, like somebody's gonna post on Reddit, like the devs love Aggro Shaman and why you will never see a control meta, and it's gonna be that one quote that says, "We're trying to make sure the games don't last too long," and then somebody's gonna say, they're gonna give an explanation of what they feel like, and they're gonna be like, "So this is why the dev team is fucking incompetent because they're not designing from the standpoint of like." Pure game quality. They're just designing for mobile games, which is obviously a cheap platform because it's just about money. So greedy devs, fuck them. Like, this is essentially what the first Reddit post is going to come up with. And so, yeah, and answering that, I probably wouldn't. I just wouldn't do that. I would never answer that. I'd be like,
we're considering Blizzard always prints like multiple cards for like one archetype. It seems like Blizzard kind of like decides what the deck should look like before they print the set. They don't just like print like 100 random cards and like let people figure out what to do with it. They print like those like 5 archetypes, like get 5 new cards each or whatever, and like they kind of want to like have the decks be built before the set comes out already.
Yeah,
I don't know.
At least one so set. Yeah,
I think it's obvious that they kind of do that. Like, Beast Druid got like 7 cards at once or whatever. It's obvious that they want to force something to be there.
Yeah.
They're all linear.
Magic
too.
The Gathering does the same, right? Like, it's funny because in Magic, the devs internally oftentimes have, like, not the exact deck lists of the tournament winners, but they have a very, very solid approximation of what the meta will look like. They have, like, let's say 3 decks internally that they know are going to be the top decks. They're like, this is what we're going to be seeing in tournaments, no doubt. And they do it on purpose through power creep and just powerful cards that end up, you know, they close out games. And the few times that hasn't happened, the result was like, here's this one card we completely overlooked and we printed. And the result is we ban it because this shit's too fucking good. Like, they know exactly what's going to be coming out. So it's funny, you know, there's still surprises on Blizzard's end. They mentioned recently that Spirit Claws was not meant to be good. It was meant to be like a terrible card to calm down the community about Shaman. And like, obviously everybody's like, oh, I'm sure that worked out. But, you know, they do get surprised by the way the community uses the cards, because even then, like, if you look at Shaman back then, yes, Spirit Claws was added, but a few iterations, it still took a few iterations before it solidified. And then, like, this meta, I'd say, was maybe in the last 2 weeks the most solidified it's ever been. But before that, it was still kind of shifting a bit and, you know, getting people trying out new stuff. So now we're entering the era, like, Ice Age of this meta, where we just like wait and freeze to death until the new expansion comes out. But yeah, new cards definitely surprise them, which is interesting.
Okay, well, yeah, that's that'll be pretty interesting. I hope one day they do actually answer something mobile related. But that's gonna be it though, guys, for the Q&A. I guess one last thing I wanted to bring up, it's more kind of a community thing, or maybe just a friend that at least we know in the community. Freshka, you know, is a longtime player and friend that was in a car accident recently. I didn't actually even realize that until like a couple days ago. So, you know, he's a really bad accident too. So he's been in the hospital for a long time. So I wanted to, you know, kind of wish him well and, you know, just with him recovery. Thankfully he's okay and he's on the road to recovery now, but it's going to be a long road and just lots of medical bills and not being able to work and things like that. So I figured I'd mention it because he's always been a good guy. Early days of StarCraft or not StarCraft, Hearthstone beta. I remember, you know, just talking just decks and stuff with Freshka a long time, and he was a pro at 1.2. I'm not sure if he's just, you know, more of a streamer these days than more so than a pro, like an outright event playing pro, but he's always been a great guy, and so I just wanted to mention that and mention that he does have a Fundly that somebody started for him just to help out with, you know, some of his medical bills. So check that out if you can, guys. You know, I know a lot of you don't know him, but the folks that do know him, you know, definitely check that out and, you know, maybe send a donation his way to help out with that. But want to wrap up the show, guys, and 6-0, fantastic having you on. We got to have you on more, dude. Like, this would have this be a start of a trend, you know, that'd be awesome. But you got any you got any shout outs you want to do? Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter mostly. I like shitposting over there. And yeah, thanks to you for having me. And thanks to my team and my teammates for helping me out with all that stuff the past months. So, cheers.
Yeah, CLG 2017 Hearthstone. That's going to be pretty awesome to see. Noxious, shout-outs?
Yeah, big shout-out to you, man, for putting this episode together. Yeah. As usual, and of course, shout-out to all the patrons who help the show be supported. I mean, the milestone, you know, this milestone has been
it's been awesome,
it's been reached, you know, repeatedly, and that's really comforting given that, you know, just we're looking at last year, we were really looking at the show like, okay guys, we got to get this thing on the road, and you guys have helped a lot, so appreciate it.
Yeah, and we want to do some more, you know, in 2017. So I've been kind of asking some just a bit on the Patreon, or just to all the patrons, see what you guys are interested in, as well as I'll probably start posting more weekly update videos, like just on the actual Patreon, just to give you guys some more content there and keep you updated on what we're doing with the show and all that stuff. But yeah, just like Noxious said, huge thanks to you guys. You guys have been fantastic, you know, obviously the last few months, you know, particularly, And this year has been off to a great start. So hopefully we can continue it in 2017, grow it too. That'd be amazing. But as in terms of the show and this, just the VODs, just my shout-outs, shout-out to the both of you guys, of course, for doing the show with me, all the folks for watching. I know Trinity's going on, so thanks for sticking around and actually you know, watching us talk about Hearthstone instead of, you know, talk stone over play stone. But if you missed any of the show, you can catch it on youtube.com/ChamManV. The audios will be available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, all of the places you can listen to podcasts, but particularly iTunes. That'll be probably updated later tonight or early morning, depending on when iTunes updates. But the VODs will be up like right at, I mean, probably like an hour after the show. So you can check it out there and let folks know if you enjoy the show. And tune in next week whenever we're back with hopefully another guest. That'd be awesome. But until then, for 6-0, Noxious, and myself, ChamManV, we'll see you next week.
Peace.
Later.
Peace.